two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. If it affects your life in any way whatsoever, I'm going to talk about it. And I'm very honored today to talk healthcare. We're going to fix it today. I've got two doctors who are going to help me fix healthcare, and we can do it in 2 hours because, you know, that's what Congress is trying to do, right? So joining me is Dr. Catherine Allen. She's a Democrat. And also joining me is Dr. Brian Shiwazawa. You are a Republican. So what is affordable healthcare? And I know, Dr. Shiwazawa, you touched on it. It really depends on your income level. But the people who are in Congress right now, in the Senate, their income levels are much higher than I would say the majority of the United States. So in my view, I'm not sure they really understand what affordable means to those of who are below the poverty line. And I do want to start with you, Dr. Shiwazawa. What are some things that the Republicans can do to understand what it means to make something actually affordable?
Well, understanding is a key to any problem. So we can find out what the problem is and then work through this, hopefully in a collaborative, and to quote Senator John McCain, collaborative and work in a bipartisan way. Not just Republicans, but I think Democrats and the citizens at large have very little understanding of what really drives healthcare costs and how big of an impact it can have on each one of us. And most of us don't realize that until we get sick or injured. And we have to use our health care.
Well, both of you are doctors. I mean, do you know if the people in Congress right now in Washington, D.C. are actually talking to doctors who are in this to understand, or they're just going on politics?
It seems to me that it's been a very non-transparent, ideological discussion so far. And it is hard for Americans to understand because most of us don't have income levels and excellent health care the way that Congress does. And Senator McCain, of course, just got back from his surgery in which he was diagnosed with a glioblastoma. And I don't know what drove him to vote against the skinny health care bill, but perhaps he had time to reflect that he's very fortunate to have this health care and imagine what it would be like to be faced with a critical illness and to not have something that he can rely on and afford. I think everybody in Congress should think about that and have empathy for others.
So why is health care so expensive? Let's take insurance out of it for just a minute. If I walked into the doctor, just the visit alone, $110 for them to listen to my heart and look at my eyes. Why is that so expensive?
Well, you can't take insurance out of that discussion.
Because
insurance is one of the major drivers in cost.
Well, if we didn't have any insurance at all, does that mean doctors would only be charging $25 every time a patient walked in, or would they be charging more? Like, how does insurance affect the price that doctors charge or hospitals?
Doctors have to cover their overhead. I spent 25 years in private practice, and it became increasingly more difficult to take care of indigent patients. It became more difficult to keep abreast of insurance regulations that could affect my bottom line, because if I didn't comply for them, they would affect my reimbursement. It became difficult to have to hire more staff to comply with insurance regulations and just to keep the overhead paid and my staff paid. And when I was in practice, I felt like it was important to provide my staff with health care benefits and retirement benefits. And it finally pretty much drove me out of business because I wasn't willing to keep gouging my patients for higher and higher costs.
Right.
But I think another thing the public might not understand is we don't really set fees. Most patients have some kind of insurance. The insurance companies set the fees, not us.
If I walked into your practice for just my annual wellness check, the insurance company tells you, hey, you can charge her or we'll reimburse you $110 for that visit. You don't actually get to say, my price is $200. The insurance company is going to give me $110. So you, patient, out of pocket, need to give me $90.
Well, that's one of the ironies of the system is, yes, we could charge you $250. And if you didn't have any insurance, you would get socked for that whole amount. That's how people with no insurance get hurt even more by our system. But most of the time, the patient has some kind of insurance, and you can charge as much as you want. But you're contracted with that insurance company, and you get paid what they think you should be paid.
Dr. Shiozawa, I know you said you were in the emergency, and maybe you didn't deal as much on the insurance side as a doctor in private practice may have. But what were some of the things that you ran up against in when or are practicing?
Well, we deal with insurance on a daily and nightly basis. Insurance is key, really, to a lot of health care in this country, in terms of access and in terms of affordability, and frankly, in terms of outcomes. In the narrow context, though, that you're talking about emergency department, we take all comers, whether you have insurance or not. Now, for some patients, it makes a big difference if they have an insurance that is aligned, say, with a particular network. Let's say, for example, you have Intermountain Healthcare Insurance. Then you should probably go to an IHC facility because ultimately it'll cost you less and your co-pays will be less and your overall costs will be less. But insurance is a big key to everything. And that's why the ACA is such a big deal. Heather, I want to get back to one comment you made, though. Yeah. Is Congress listening to physicians in this? And I think the answer is some. I had a personal conversation, for example, with Secretary Price recently. And he's a physician. He's an orthopedic surgeon by background. And I will tell you one insight that I had with him that I didn't have with the previous Secretary of Health, Secretary Burwell, is that when we asked him a question on Medicaid financing or on Medicare financing, that he could come up with an answer and a response to that. Now, whether or not you agree with Secretary Price's outlook, he has the experience and the expertise to know what, for example, opiate pain medication abuse is all about,
right,
or what the future of Medicaid financing is. When before the other secretary would be looking at her advisors and saying, what do you think? This is an example of where you actually have a physician in HHS, which is very critical to this discussion. And so it's been nice to be able to consult both on a state and national basis with our healthcare leaders and also the other fellow legislators. That's one nice thing being in the Senate, to lend some expertise in that venue.
Do you think that anybody who is trying to work on health care, it should be like a mandate that they have to be doctors in order to work on it? I mean, is that reasonable?
I don't know that you have to be a physician per se, but draw on that expertise. Just like you would in, say, if you were dealing with an FAA bill, you would want to involve some pilots. Or if you're talking about transportation, you want to deal with highway engineers. Draw on the expertise that is out there. Get the opinions of the people who know what's going on in the day-to-day world. And absolutely, rely on that.
I did want to go back to, because you are a hospital doctor, an ER doc, I had an experience a few years ago where I had an emergency, had to go to the hospital, and was in for the shock of my life when the bills all started rolling in. And I equate it to a shopping mall, because you walk in the front doors of the hospital, and it's as if you walked into the front doors of a shopping mall, they charge you $5,000 just to walk in the door. Then the doctor who sees you, like, it's like you're going into Payless Shoe Store, and you have to pay to get into Payless Shoe Store to see the ER doctor another couple of $1,000s. Then they send you off to get your CT scan, and you have to pay for the CT scan, and that's like going to Cinnabon, and you have to pay for that Cinnabon or the CT scan. And then you get to the surgeon, and the surgeon has their fee, and the anesthesiologist has their fee, and the lab has, you have blood work done. And so you've basically got charged to walk into a shopping mall, and then you got charged to go into all the other stores that are around there. And that, I just thought, you're in the hospital. Like, can't they just send you one bill? Like, is that too much to ask? I mean, please tell me, you're an ER doctor.
One of the real concerns we have in medicine, and let's say even hospital-based medicine, is the cost. And it's true. If you go to an emergency department, that is going to be the most expensive access to healthcare we have in this country. And you did allude to exactly to the different types of fees. There is a hospital facility fee. The hospital charges just to maintain a 24-hour, 365-day ER staffed with doctors, nurses, techs, and everybody else who's going to be there and needed to respond to a critical emergency. Then you're going to have the additional costs of everything else, like labs and x-rays. You alluded to CT scan. Well, that actually pales in comparison to MRIs. And then you talk about additional specialist fees. And we actually touched on that, the issue of how those can add even more to the overall cost of healthcare. Heather, you're absolutely right. This is an expensive problem. It wasn't addressed in the Affordable Care Act, and that's probably one of the biggest concerns, is it's not affordable under this current healthcare system. And that's one of the things we all need to work on, is this cost of medicine and how we can keep quality, preserve access, but make it more affordable for everyone in this country.
So what I want to know is, and I get it depends on your income level. Somebody who has more can afford more insurance or more options on their insurance. But let's say for the person who makes $30,000 a year, and there are a lot of us who make a lot of people out there who make a lot less than that. But let's just take $30,000 a year. That person is going to be, after they pay their rent and or mortgage, and maybe they have a car payment, they have kids in school, they've got to do clothing, they have to get gas, they have all these other expenses, groceries, utilities. At the end of the month, on $30,000 a year, and that's before taxes, they may only have $125 a month left to pay their insurance premiums. That is not enough money, really, to even get the most basic of insurance. So what do the, and I want to ask each of you separately. So Dr. Allen, what do you think constitutes affordable health care?
Well, first of all, I would like to bring up the fact that Americans pay more than twice as much per person per year than any other country. Country number two pays half. Our figure is getting close to $10,000 per person per year. The way we distribute our healthcare pie, we have to really think about that because we pay a lot for high technology. We pay a lot at the beginnings of life and the end of life. And tough decisions have to be made when you try to figure out how to divvy up a finite number of healthcare dollars. And I'm not sure that we as Americans have figured that out. And I also want to say that all that money we spend on healthcare is not producing the best outcomes in the world. We actually have a lower life expectancy. We have a higher maternity mortality rate and infant mortality rate. So I think we like to delude ourselves that we have the best healthcare system in the world. And there's a certain amount of pride and hubris that prevents us from looking at countries that might have solved this problem more equitably. And I feel that we should. I feel that knowledge is, and I'll echo what Dr. Shiozawa said, you cannot solve a problem unless you base it on factual information and data. And we don't emphasize preventive care enough. That's a whole other discussion that we need to have, that when people go without health insurance, when they have this fear of telling the doctor the truth, when things are diagnosed late in the course of an illness, this adds enormous expense to all of us.
And I appreciate all that you're saying, but what do you consider affordable in the healthcare market?
It would probably be a percentage of somebody's income. If you want to look at it that way, I haven't asked myself that exact question. I'm actually in favor of a system where the cost is minimal to the patient, such as a Medicare for all type of system. And that leads us to a different discussion, which I'm sure will come up at some point or other, and that's the administrative costs of various healthcare systems. Medicare is only 1% administrative cost. In the private sector, because CEOs have to be paid large salaries and investors have to be paid their dividends, that administrative cost is 18 to 20%.
Wow.
So we have to talk about who's making profit in the healthcare world, and it's not the patient, and it's usually not the providers.
And Dr. Shiozawa, what do you consider affordable in the healthcare arena?
Again, I think affordable means different things to different people. You used, Heather, for example, the figure of $30,000. Now, if you look at the federal poverty level for a family four or five, you're pretty much getting close to that level. And that's at 100% of the federal poverty level. And that's one of the benchmarks we actually looked at for a Medicaid expansion. And why do we have Medicaid? Because we have Medicaid to take care of those who are poor or those who have less types of resources, whether it's fixed assets or income, to take care of themselves. And these are talking about the basic things,
right?
Food, shelter, and one would say also the basics of taking care of your family with health care. And so affordability clearly is an income-based issue, and your $30,000 figure is close to what we would say for an average family of four or five here in the state of Utah. As single adults, obviously, are different, and with larger families, it's going to be different, of course. But you could use that as a discussion point. And in fact, that's critical as we go forward, particularly since there is going to not be an immediate discussion now in the Senate, at least on the floor, but maybe an HEW or HHS in committee on where we go with health care in this country.
Thank you to Dr. Kathy Allen and to Republican Utah State Senator Dr. Brian Shiozawa for tackling the Let's Fix Healthcare issue. Be sure to send in your questions via my Facebook page. And if you don't want to miss any of this conversation, subscribe to my show, Money Making Sense, on Apple Podcasts.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense on the social media, Money Making Sense, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.